You are listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball, a podcast by fans from the IUBase.com website for anyone wanting more information on Indiana University baseball. Today is Monday, March 25th, 2019. I'm Josh Bennett, joined by stats guru Cassidy Palmer, master of the RPI Carl James, and the man who somehow managed to watch all 27 innings at the BART this weekend without being ejected. I'm still shaking my head as to how that happened, Chris Feeney. Well, folks, 4 weeks ago tonight, we were sitting here trying to dissect a disastrous weekend in Knoxville, Tennessee. And tonight, we're sitting on a 8-game winning streak, and we'll be talking about that wild midweek win over a very hot Indiana State team over in Terre Haute. And then a really impressive 3-game sweep to open up Big Ten play at the BART over Iowa. We'll be referring to this week as Sweeps Week. More on that later. But the Tuesday midweek against the Sycamores looked really promising early on, with the Hoosiers jumping out to an 8-1 lead by the top of the third. Well, by the time the fourth inning ended, the Hoosiers were staring at a 10-8 deficit. This one turned into a wild back-and-forth affair that ended up with the Hoosiers eking out a 15-14 win. There were combined 10 home runs hit in the game, including a grand slam by Elijah Dunham, a big one in the eighth by Drew Ashley to give the Hoosiers a 14-13 lead at the time, and then the final knockout blow by Cole Barr to seal the deal in the ninth. It definitely reminded me of a College World Series game from the 90s at Rosenblatt. You know, runs were being scored, double digits both sides, balls were flying all over the place. The Iowa series at the BART was started with the classics pitchers' duels, with Paulie Milto only having given up zero runs entering the ninth, and was ended by a Logan Kalitha walk-off hit in the bottom half. The rest of the series was absolutely dominated by the Hoosiers. Tanner Gordon backed up last Saturday's great start with another, leading to him today being named Big Ten Pitcher of the Week, and the bats came alive, putting up 13 runs. Sunday basically turned into a bullpen day for Indiana, and they held Iowa to a single run while the bats stayed hot. For the week, the Hoosiers averaged 9.5 runs per game. This week was full of outstanding play and plays, and unfortunately we won't be able to get to all of them, but we'll get started by digging into our Hoosier highlights. I'll lead it off tonight, and so my Hoosier highlight is going to be Grant Richardson bouncing back from a rough 4-strikeout performance on Friday night. He's absolutely come out of the gate on fire, has done nothing but rake and play a really good outfield since he was inserted into the starting lineup. I was out in the grass down the right field line when he made that diving catch late Sunday. I had the nice profile side view of it. And off the bat, I thought, no, that's a hit. He had no business getting to that baseball. And when I saw where the ball was when he started his dive, I literally out loud was saying, no, 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 no. If that ball gets by him, it's probably an easy inside the park home run. Just an incredible play. He had 4 RBI in the ISU game and then wore the golden sombrero on Friday night. To be honest, I'm thinking, okay, teams are starting to get enough info on him. Maybe they're able to find a hole. You see it all the time. But what does he do? Comes out on Saturday and Sunday with 6 hits and 8 at-bats and drives in 7 runs. Just a great start to his Hoosier career. And it was announced earlier today that he was named the Big Ten Player of the Week. And since he's a freshman, that also gives him the Big Ten Freshman of the Week award. So with that, not only did the Hoosiers sweep the week's games, but also for the first time in program history, they swept the conference awards. So a big congrats to Grant and Tanner for receiving those honors. So Cass, what's your Hoosier highlight for the week?
Dunham's grand slam against Indiana State. IU was down 3 runs in the 7th inning in a very back and forth home run heavy game, and things could have escalated from there quickly had IU not put up, what was it, 5 runs. And for Elijah, it was just the big I'm back after starting the season injured. So to see him get that hit, to see that happen, was a good sign for the next few weeks for Elijah. So how about your highlight, Chris?
Thanks, Cass. I'm going to go with Connor Maness in the 9th inning on Friday night. You know, the wheels came off a little bit. They had the 2 runs. They had guys on base. And plenty of times that game turns into either They get three more, and it's hit after hit after hit, and we just have a 1-2-3 bottom of the ninth and go home ahead. Or you know, you show up big time, and Connor did. You know, it really was looking like another, you know, come from ahead loss, and we've had a few of those so far. So to me, that was a big highlight. He got the strikeout. He got the line out. Houston made a nice grab. And I really thought that ball was going up the middle. I guess I had a bad angle on it or something. My head was already down. And then, boom, right into Houston's glove. So Connor really stepped up after, you know, bounce back from Indiana State and a bounce back for the bullpen in general. You know, Connor really, really kept the game where it needed to be so that Kalaitha could do his thing in the bottom of the inning. So he gets my Hoosier highlight. Carl, what about you?
For me, I'm going to go with a somewhat unusual pick. I'm going to go with Andrew Salfrank's pickoffs in game three, the Sunday game. He only pitched two innings. And according to Coach Mercer, he didn't have his stuff. But he really talked, Coach Mercer really talked about Andrew Salfrank managing the game for the two innings that he was in. He didn't give up a run. So he got into some trouble. He had some great moves, got some guys to take off early, picked them off. So he managed the run game. But he also managed his pitches. He managed to keep throwing strikes. Yeah, he walked one guy, he hit a guy, but he stayed focused. He stayed in, he pitched, and he kept the game without a run. And knowing that the bullpen had been rested up to that point, he was able to turn the game over and give the Hoosiers a chance to eventually go on and win big. But I think that's a huge piece for a starting pitcher to stay focused even when they don't have their best stuff and make a positive impact. So now we go to the big deal. We've already heard the Big Ten's awards. So now the pressure's on Chris big time for who's going to win these red belts. Chris.
Thanks, Carl. It won't be the first time. If I disagree with him, it won't be the first time. I know it's happened twice already since we've started doing this. Now that we're into Big Ten play, we're actually going to do it like a red belt review here. Okay, we're going to go over who's won them. For the pitching award, the red belts, for the Joey Donato end of season award, Andrew Salfrank has one red belt, Connor Maness has two, and Paulie Milto has three. So he's obviously the leader for the Joey Donato award. And the one we're going to add to that this week is Tanner Gordon. All right, he was so good on Saturday that he didn't, I mean, he could have taken the field with just infielders until there was one out in the seventh inning. Now, I know you're like, that's insane. You can't be right. They got a hit in the second inning. Well, I'm willing to bet that the single they hit through the left side, Jeremy Houston could have got to and brought it back into the infield before the guy got an inside the park home run. And Gordon struck out the next two. And not a ball got hit to the outfield till the seventh inning. Not a hit, not a fly out. Ryan caught two little pop-ups, foul pops that Carl actually got video of. There was two or three other infield grounders and 12 strikeouts. So Tanner Gordon, until he gave up, even when he gave up the home run, you don't need an outfielder for that either. So until we got the out in the seventh inning, Tanner Gordon could have taken the field with just infielders. That's how good he was. When I saw that, I'm like, this can't be. But it was. You could look it up. The proof is in the stats. And Tanner Gordon was amazing. So he gets the pitching red belt for the week. Now we're going to review the Alex Dickerson Award red belts. Let's see. We have Cade Bunnell has one. Matt Gorski has one. Logan Kalaitha has one. And the leader in the clubhouse right now is Matt Lloyd with two. And this week's, I'm going to go against the Big Ten here. Grant Richardson, he had a great week. But to me, I'm kind of with what Cass was saying with her Hoosier highlight. The biggest hit of this week was Elijah Dunham's grand slam. Okay, there was another game where we were going to come from ahead lose, right? It's not a come from behind win. It's a come from ahead loss. You know, we were up 8-1 in that game. And he decides for his first career homer to be a grand slam to bring us back. And it's not like he didn't have a great week either. If it wasn't for Grant Richardson, Elijah Dunham might have won that award anyway. 5 hits, 6 runs, 7 RBIs, 2 bombs, a steal, and 4 walks. The most overlooked week in the history of Hoosier baseball because of Grant Richardson, but we're not overlooking him. Elijah Dunham gets the offensive red belt. That granny was huge. Now for the defensive review, the Tony Butler Award, Sam Crail has already won a red belt. Jeremy Houston has one. Matt Lloyd has a red belt. And the leader here is Logan Kalathu with two red belts. And this week, Grant Richardson. All right, you can have this one. Okay. What a catch in right field. Ron Swoboda-esque in the 1969 World Series. What a catch. The way he came in, the way he left his feet. It was funny. A couple innings before, Matt Lloyd made a really nice scoop. And I said to Carl, there really hasn't been a red belt. I think that might be a red belt. Two innings later, Grant Richardson makes the catch of the year. So, yes, Grant, you can have the defensive red belt. So, for this week, we have offensive Elijah Dunham, defensive Grant Richardson, and pitching Tanner Gordon. Oh, I know I'm supposed to be listening for a sound. Let's see. When you sweep a team and win that many games in a row, sometimes there isn't that much mail. So there might
You've
not
got
be any.
Mail.
Oh, there is.
You've got mail. You've got mail. You've got mail.
One of these days, I'm going to get that cued right. Where? Okay. It is mailbag time. And our first question of this week goes to Cassidy from Keegan. Although it wasn't technically a mailbag question, Keegan mentioned that he was concerned about the bullpen and was wondering whether the run differential of the starters to the relievers is. This then led to a discussion about earned versus unearned runs and free passes. So Cassidy, what do you have?
Okay, so I started looking at this pretty much as soon as the conversation started. But so far, it's been pretty even between the starters and relievers in overall runs. Starters have given up 49, relievers have given up 51. But when you adjust for the innings pitched, the starters are giving up 0.4 runs per inning of work, and relievers are giving up 0.6 runs per inning of work. So while it's about even total runs, the starters have thrown more innings. But then you have to look at those unearned runs. And that's where there is a good bit of a difference. 20% of the starters' runs have been unearned, which is still too high. A full 37% of the relievers' runs have been unearned. And so when you adjust that innings rate for the two, the starters go down to 0.33 runs per inning pitched, and the relievers are at 0.39 runs per inning pitched. So it's real close between the two when you take out those errors and those unearned runs. To go with that, there have been free passes. Overall, the starters are walking or plunking 9% of the batters that they've faced. Relievers are at 14.5%. So that is a good bit higher. But these numbers are pretty different with runners in scoring position. The starters so far in the season have walked or plunked almost 14% of the batters they faced with runners in scoring position, which is a 53% increase from their overall rate. That's kind of a big jump that you don't necessarily want to see in your starters with runners in scoring position. You'd rather they not be giving up free passes with runners in scoring position. The relievers, while their walk and HBP rate is higher at 17% of the batters they faced, that's only a 19-20% increase from their overall rate. Again, you still want to see that number lower with runners in scoring position. But the bullpen really has overall not been that bad. There have been a couple of games, especially early on, where they kind of let it down. But overall, when you take out especially those errors, which have really hit the bullpen, the numbers show that it's been about even between the two, which is really good to see. So, Carl, I'm going to send this right back at you. William asks and says he was at the game Sunday, and Logan Kalathu seemed pretty hurt. What would be your outfield / DH going forward if he misses a big chunk of time?
Well, thank you for that one, William. We're, of course, hoping that that Logan Kalathu will it isn't too bad and he'll be able to come back in the near future. But, you know, in the immediate, Coach Mercer answered this by putting Justin Walker at second and moving Drew Ashley into the outfield. you can't discount how beneficial it is to have a guy like Drew Ashley who can play all over the field. And if you don't know this, he also catches. So maybe one of these days in a few years, we'll have one of those games where like he'll play one inning at every single position. I would love to see that.
He can pitch too, Carl. He can pitch too.
Okay, he needs to do it. We need to have the Drew Ashley playing every position throughout the game. We need to see that happen. But this means that you can have infielders like Walker and Bunnell and have them compete with an outfielder like Sam Crail for this extra job. So it gives that flexibility to be able to say, like the coach says, the guy who puts in the most work during the week, who shows and proves through practice and scrimmages that they have earned a spot, they get that. And it's not, okay, who's the better outfield? You got Drew Ashley. He can go either way. So that way you can bring in the next best guy up. You know what? I don't know who that is, but I'm going to trust Jeff Mercer to make that correct evaluation at this point. And make sure the next guy up has a chance to make a good, positive impact.
Carl, can I add one thing or actually ask you one thing? Because you're my advisor on all things double switches. Is there a way that having Matt Lloyd be the extra hitter in this situation could help him with the warming up, could help him so that a Friday night doesn't happen again?
That's really all about, he'd have to be a DH. Lloyd would have to be the DH.
So you'd have to start the game as the DH.
You would have to start the game as the DH. There's really no way around it.
We'd need a new first baseman.
Right. And the point is, there are kind of weird ways around that, but it like requires you replacing two or three guys at once. And that creates all kinds of other problems.
Right. Because I just look at that. Maybe this is an opportunity to switch the DH to have Matty a couple of games there. And then you don't have the issue come the ninth inning and he can't get warm because he's got to take the field.
Yeah. But then that also limits you that you need to have someone who's a good quality first baseman.
We might have.
I
think we do.
I think
we'll see what happens with Scotty.
Yeah. But again, as I said, I just don't know that you would compete. You can't have a guy like Crail then competing for the first base job. So that's why I think the they seem to be leaning more towards the having Ashley be the guy who floats around and plugging in wherever he can.
Bradley has turned into like to only come in at the end of the game. He's like to Pritchard. I don't understand what's going on here, but I mean he can hit. He could play the field, but maybe that's something they can look at later if they really need the extra body. But I definitely Drew Ashley going to the outfit is not an issue whatsoever. You're absolutely right.
All right. Well, this one, this question's for Josh. Aaron asks, how do you feel about the netting put up all the way to the first and third base lines around Bart Kauffman Field? There seems to be a larger discussion generated in baseball about safety and netting in general. How do you feel about the increased netting around baseball for safety purposes?
How do I feel about adding netting above the dugouts? Well, if you'd asked me that immediately after they were put up at the BART, I would have told you that I hated it. We used to sit second row right behind the third base dugout. And I think when you're that close to them, they're a bit of a distraction. We've moved back. So you don't notice it unless you're sitting right up on them. But now I completely understand that it's a must have, especially at this level and then up. Next time you're at a game, look around for a second and you'll see multiple people with their faces buried in their phones or with their heads turned away from the action, talking to somebody else. Not to mention all the young ones that even if they were paying attention, they'd have no chance to react to a screaming foul ball. It was the exact same way before the nets were put up. I can't tell you how many times we saw someone almost getting smoked by a late swing. 3 years ago, at the Lexington Regional, some of us almost witnessed a cameraman getting killed by a foul ball while taking pictures on top of the dugout. He was as close as he could get to home plate and took a laser right between the eyes. He went
straight. That was so scary. I'm so glad you brought that up. I was going to bring that up if you didn't. That was so scary what happened to that guy. Mm-hmm.
Hey,
I'm pro nets. Put it anywhere you want.
He was lucky.
That was so scary to watch, man. Ugh.
So, yeah, although I don't like looking through them, they've got to be there. I don't think there's any way you could rationally justify them not to be. It's just too much of a risk for everyone, university fans, et cetera. But thanks for the question, Aaron. And it was nice to get to meet you this weekend. Thanks to all who have submitted questions for the mailbag segment this season. Anyone who wants to do so in the future can either shoot us an email at gohoosiers@iubase.com or send us a tweet at see you at the BART or iubase17, or better yet, come up to us at the BART, ask your question, and we'll try to work it into the show. But that's going to do it for this week's segment. So now I'll send it over to Cass so she can share with us some key stats from the week. It's all yours, Cass.
Okay, thanks, Josh. And before I go to that, I did notice in my time hop today, talking about the Nets, 3 years ago today, IU was playing at Indiana State, and I had the lovely tweet of, I'm at square and foul line drive territory, so I kind of have to pay attention. Tweets will be kind of scattered accordingly. So for someone whose nose is buried in a scorecard for the whole game, I definitely appreciate those Nets. But going on to the key stats, I looked at some of the numbers surrounding this winning streak, and we all know that especially this offense has been dominant, as has the pitching staff. The team's averaging 11 runs per game while giving up 4 per game. And if you limit that to only the earned runs, it goes down to 2.9 a game. The offense is batting .325 as a team, which is kind of nuts, and averaging 8.8 strikeouts per game. So remember how I said don't panic at the high strikeout numbers to start the season? This is what I was talking about. They're going to fluctuate a little bit for the rest of the season, but I don't think we'll see another Tennessee anytime soon. In that 8 to 10 range is about what you can expect. They've also averaged 5 walks per game, and they were at about 3.5. So they're just seeing the ball better, a little more patient at the plate, and that goes both ways for the strikeouts and walks. On the pitching side, the team has a staff ERA of 2.88. That does include the crazy Indiana State game. If you exclude that, it goes down even further to 2 even. So the pitching staff has just been phenomenal. They're striking out. They're averaging 10.5 strikeouts per game. They were at just under 7. So they're picking up their strikeouts. They're also walking far fewer. They're walking about 1.5 a game, and they were above 4 per game coming into this winning streak. And going along with both of those, the strike percentage is up. They're throwing almost 65% of their pitches for strikes compared to just shy of 61%. So just all in all, the team is clicking better. Across the board, numbers are better. But there are still a couple of areas for concern, starting with those errors. They have worked it down to 1.3 per game, which is down from the 1.5 before the win streak started. But those 1.3 errors still account for more than 1 unearned run a game. And that's too high for this team. Yes, the pitching's been dominant. Yes, the batting's been dominant. But in the long run, against higher level opponents, against Illinois, against Michigan, against Minnesota, that ain't gonna fly. Pitching with runners in scoring position, in addition to those free passes with runners in scoring position, is also a little bit of concern. During this streak, overall, opponents are batting .245 against IU, which is higher than the season opponent batting average at .227, but isn't too concerning, especially considering a good chunk of those hits have been the weak ground balls just outside of the infield. So that's not too concerning. But with runners in scoring position during the win streak, that actually goes up to .286, which, again, you want to see numbers with runners in scoring position for your pitchers go down, not up. Overall, on the season, it is also a little higher than the average, going from .227 overall to .233 with runners in scoring position. Over the next couple of weeks, those are kind of two of the big things I'd like to see improvement on as we're into Big Ten play. So, Carl, There are enough games across the college baseball world to start bringing RPI into focus a little bit. What does this tell us at this point?
Before I get into that, I just have to, if I heard you right, Cassidy, you basically said that 30% of the team's ERA happened in one game that IU won.
Yes.
Okay. I just,
yes. It was a weird game.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now I can get back to the RPI. Okay. Funny, I just listened to a D1 baseball podcast on my way home today, and Aaron Fitt was talking about RPI and just saying that I don't pay attention to RPI at this part of the season. It's way too early. And I get what he's saying, and I agree with him, and it's specifically in the view that they are taking, which is when you're comparing teams from different regions and teams from different conferences that have very different strategies of how they schedule the early part of the season, it's very difficult to compare. So looking at a rank, you can say, yes, Indiana, which by the way is now 22, number 22 in the RPI. Oh, that's great. The rank in the country doesn't say a lot to me, but what I do look at is the rank among Big Ten teams. Big Ten teams have the same basic strategy when it comes to scheduling this, the first part of the season. They have the same, most of them have the same weather difficulties. They tend to play a lot of road games. So all those things factor. So if you look at that, Illinois is pacing the conference, number 5 in the country, followed by Indiana at number 22, Nebraska at number 41, who just got into the win column, basically into the positive above 500 column. Minnesota, who still hasn't gotten above 500, is the 4th best at number 55, and then followed by the previously nationally ranked Michigan team at number 66. Then you dig into that a little deeper, and you look into quadrant 1 wins, which in baseball simply means the top 50 in RPI. You have 3 of those from Indiana and Illinois, 2 from Minnesota, and 1 each from Nebraska and Michigan. Michigan's 1-4, and Nebraska's 1-5 among those best teams. Minnesota is a little bit of an aberration here because they are 2-10 among quadrant 1 teams, meaning they've played 12 quadrant 1 teams already this season, which is, it's a brutal schedule that the Gophers played. And if you looked at any metric going into this past weekend, you would have thought Minnesota going into Penn State was a huge opportunity for Penn State to get a Big Ten series win. What happened? Well, the RPI said Minnesota was a much better team than Penn State. And what happened? Minnesota swept Penn State at Penn State. So that's my one little piece of evidence that that the RPI can matter, particularly when you look at it at a very specific small sliver of things. And with those things, you know, Illinois looks like the team to beat. But Indiana is right up there. So, you know, a lot of that has to do, obviously, it looks a lot better when you're right in the middle of a win streak. And if things were to go sour for a week or two, it can suddenly look really, really bad. So I do caution that, yes, everything always looks rosy, you know, during a win streak. But, you know, things are trending in a very, very positive direction. You compare Indiana and Michigan's resumes right now, and Indiana's resume looks a lot better than Michigan's right now. Michigan does very good at beating, you know, subpar programs, and has really struggled against good competition. While Indiana's beat Washington, Indiana's beat Indiana State, who some publications have nationally ranked right now. So, you know, there was that 3 games at Tennessee. Tennessee's a quality club. And as we know, and I think overall it's a positive thing that Indiana's wins have come in the later portion of this as opposed to the early portion of it, which is, again, I think is indicative more of the strength of the competition. When there was, you know, there were some distinctions there. Well, as we head into the next week, the winnings, hopefully the winning streak can continue, but there are a few teams, or at least a couple teams, that that want to have something else to say about that. So the Hoosiers have a very tough midweek contest and their first road series in the Big Ten Conference. Chris, what have you got for us?
All right. Thanks, Clive. If everything looks rosy in a winning streak, let's look rosy in the next podcast. And I say, all right, let's do it. The midweek contest that we have is Kent State. They're 9-12. They're 4-9 so far on the road. They're 9-12, but they started out 0-5, and they play a real tough schedule. So take that into consideration, I think. This is a pretty good squad. They're undefeated in the midweek. They're 4-0. And then I said, all right, well, who's this midweek pitcher they have that's so good? And they've used 22 guys. So it's too hard to really figure that out. They have, like, starters going one inning, two innings. So that was a mess to try to put together. But, you know, they made the tournament last year. Their head coach is an ex-Met, Jeff Duncan. He was on the short list, or at least allegedly on the short list, for the opening position here at Indiana at one point.
He was on our list.
Yeah, he was on our short list, which meant that and like $2 get you on the subway. So, you know, either way. But he was on the short list. They won 40 games last season to make that regional. They won the MAC. They're from the MAC. A little MACtion going on at the BART on Wednesday. This was the first time they had made the regional, though. I had won the MAC in 5 years, so... You know, Duncan's got him playing better, putting the system together. And it looked like he's a little bit into analytics as well. Maybe not as much as our brain trust, but it seemed like he had a little bit to do with it too. A big hitter for them is Pete Schuler. He's hitting .338. He's got 4 bombs, 6 doubles, and 17 RBIs. So we could definitely keep an eye out for that name. You know, see what happens at the BART. Hopefully he doesn't come up with too many guys on. And we don't really even know who's pitching yet. You know, is it a Cam Beecham? Is it a Alex Franklin? You know, we're not sure. So whoever's facing him, whether it's the beginning or the end of the game, let's keep an eye out for that Pete Schuler. Now, as far as alumni that might travel to Bloomington to check out the game, Steve Harvey and Drew Carey, believe it or not, are Kent State grads. So keep an eye out for them. They might come to Bloomington on a random Wednesday at 5 o'clock. Game's at 5, not 4, to check out the game at the BART. It's also Turn Black the Clock Night. So our guy Luke is going to be on the keys playing the organ all night, and they're going to have the throwback uniforms. Dressing up to go to the game is optional from what I heard. You don't have to, like, wear a suit or, you know, dress up like the old days. You don't have to do that. But the players will have it. They'll have the throwback unis on, and Luke will be playing those keys. So that should be a fun time. It's always good when he's there. Last time he had to play for 14 innings, though, and it was really cold. Luckily, they had him in the box. Houston walked it off. I think we were already in the parking lot, but whoever was still in there then went home, which was nice. Houston won it. So after we beat Kent State, play Kent State on Wednesday, then we'll go to Maryland for 3. If you're new to Hoosier baseball fandom, maybe you're not familiar with the Maryland Terrapins, but there's a bit of a rivalry. They're a bit of a chirpy team. They're a bit of a loud team. They've come into the BART the last 2 times, and they've only won 1 game out of 6. So we've really given it to him pretty good. Didalo had a big bomb and a grand slam, which led to some histrionics, can we say, almost a brawl behind the plate. Then last year, some guy Murphy decides to throw at Fineman after Miller hits a bomb, and then they want to fight. Cooper had to break that up. So now it's over at their park, which is called the Bob Smith Stadium. So I guess we're going from the BART to the Bob. And, you know, I'm sure they're going to be fired up for this series. Okay, they're coming off a 3-game sweep at the hands of Creighton, and that was at the Bob. That was in Maryland. It was actually supposed to be played in Omaha, but due to weather, they had to play it at Maryland. And Creighton went in there and won all 3, which knocked Maryland's record to 12-11. They're 4-6 at home, and they've lost 3 in a row, like I mentioned. But 6 of their losses are by 2 runs or less. So, like, you know, you always say it's baseball, right? A couple runs either way, they could have 5 more wins. So just keep that in mind also. Last year, they did not make the Big Ten tournament because a certain team swept them to finish the season, and they didn't even get to play. Oh, that was us. Yeah. They didn't even get to play in the Big Ten tournament, which was nice. Like I said, last year they got swept. They were winning in the 8th inning, right after we had played Lazy Mary for the first and only time. They were winning, I think it was about 4-2. Then Miller hit the bomb, and we outscored them 18-4 the rest of the weekend. which was beautiful. Anytime you can beat Maryland, it's a good day. At least that's what I say. I don't know what other people say, but that's what I say. Football, basketball, field hockey, just beat Maryland. That's what I always go with. As far as their starters, it looked like, you know, they have their basic guys, Hunter Parsons, their Friday guy. Most of the ERA is just under three, so the starters are pretty good. They do have a pretty good closer, the guy Murphy. He's got 12 innings, okay? He's got four saves. He's got 21 Ks. He does have a pretty high ERA, which probably means one of them went real bad because his ERA is over four. But all the rest of the outings seem pretty good. He does have four hit-by-pitches, so maybe he's still got a bit of that anger issue, or maybe it's just some wildness. I'm not sure. But it's going to be a highly contested series. I definitely think so. Is it something we should be able to go in there and win? Again, I should think that too. But to think this is just like a ho-hum series, it's not. You know, there's going to be some emotions, and you don't want to let your emotions take over in something like that, because we have an opportunity to keep this thing rolling. We beat Kent State, and then we go in there and we take care of business at 6:30 Friday, 2 o'clock Saturday, and 1 o'clock Sunday. All right, I'm looking at it here. I see a radio call for all three, some live stats, believe it or not. I don't know if Cass is going to be in charge of those, but somebody will. So we got Friday, like I said, Friday 6:30, Saturday 2 o'clock, and Sunday at 1. And hopefully we sweep them and take care of that. But really, you know, to be able to win a third series against them in a row would be huge. We're already sitting in first place in the big. And I just, we don't like these guys. They don't like these guys. It's a real thing. So let's take care of business and get back here. And you know what? It's not like we have an opportunity that we're going to fall down in the big. Sweep them. Let's go 6-0 to start off this big season. I'm a little fired up, if you can't tell. Josh, you got any final thoughts?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I don't blame you. I think we all are. We've all witnessed it firsthand these last two series at our place, and I'm sure they're going to be looking for some payback, because those were big time series, and emotions were high on all of them, man.
I can't even just doing the preview. I'm getting angry about these games and how they went down.
I got you, man.
And who was involved? It involved Scatman, right? It involved Fineman. Like, these are guys we like and guys that we've been through with.
Yep.
And they're just going to, let's just sweep them.
Yeah, agreed. Hey, looks like things are starting to come together and absolutely at the right time for the team. Still yet from perfect, as Coach said after the game on Saturday, he doesn't feel as though they've even put their best nine innings together yet. But we have to be happy with an eight-game winning streak and the way they're winning those games. Just look at this week. Two close battles decided in the last at-bat, and two where they jumped out early and just buried the opponents. Eight different Hoosiers recorded multi-hit games this week, and the pitching staff gave up two earned runs all weekend while racking up an amazing 35 strikeouts to only five walks. Just a lot to be excited about after this last week of competition, and I'm looking forward to watching to see how they do with another four chances this week to pick up some quality wins against who I would consider a rival, even though it's not a traditional rival. But just hope they can keep this thing rolling. So that's going to do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Read up on Indiana Baseball at iubase.com. Follow us on Twitter at CU at the BART and at iubase17. Please leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. For Cassidy Palmer, Chris Feeney, and Carl James, this is Josh Bennett signing off. We'll see you at the BART. To see my baby in her evening gown. And even if the world